The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
What's up, everybody? This is Andy Sukla for Hour 1 of Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday, January 22nd, 2017. And it's Championship Sunday. Two teams are coming out of today, going to Houston for Super Bowl 51. And we already know what the first one is. It will be the Atlanta Falcons going to their first Super Bowl since 1999 when they played in Super Bowl 33 and lost to the Denver Broncos. A Super Bowl I remember very well because that was the first year that I knew being a Jets fan is going to be so much fun when after the AFC title game where the Jets could have won that game. And Vane Testaverde not thrown horrible picks in the second half. But I digress. You know, I hate the phrase, now I've seen it all. Because when you look at it, have you really gone out there and seen everything the world has had to offer? And the answer is no. But after seeing some of the things in this Falcons game against the Green Bay Packers, now you might have seen it all. Aaron Rodgers comes in, he's playing MVP-level football. He's going to run the table from 4-6 all the way to hoisting that Lombardi trophy. Atlanta Falcons coming in as the number 2 seed, playing their final game at the Georgia Dome before they move into a new billion-dollar facility. You're thinking, okay, this is going to be a barn burner game. And it was, well, for one team. Final score, 44-21. And when you see the stat line of 27 for 38, 392 yards, and 4 touchdowns, you would have thought coming into this game that was going to be Aaron Rodgers' stat line against a Falcons defense that was a very middle-of-the-pack defense this season. Those numbers belong to Matt Ryan with those 392 yards and 4 touchdowns and adding a rushing touchdown on top of that, against a Packers defense that has been decimated by injuries, a secondary that is about as porous as Swiss cheese, and you're watching that game saying, this is Matt Ryan showing that I can be an elite quarterback. And he put those numbers up today and showed he is a very capable quarterback, and Dan Quinn is lucky to have him. Other guys who had amazing games from that, Julio Jones. Everybody loves Julio Jones with those 9 catches, 180 yards, and 2 touchdowns, including a 73-yard catch and run that essentially put the game away for the Falcons. Mohamed Sanu with 5 catches for 52 yards and a touchdown. And even though we're talking about how Aaron Rodgers was supposed to be the one having that 392-yard performance, in his own right, he did okay. You know, he completed 27 passes for 287 yards and 3 touchdowns. But when your defense is playing like it's not even there. Even Joe Montana couldn't win a game like that. Your defense wins championships. And when a defense doesn't show up in probably what could, to this point, would have been the most important game of the year, now you've seen it all. Going to the other side of the conference, the AFC title game is currently underway right now as we speak. In Foxborough, as the New England Patriots once again are fighting to go to another Super Bowl because we haven't seen them enough this in the Super Bowl, you know, in the last 20 years. They've gone 7 times. They've won 4. They're looking for that 5th. Belichick and Brady would be the first coach quarterback combo to win 5 Super Bowls. And they're leading 17-9 at halftime, holding the Steelers to a field goal just before the half. Tom Brady had an amazing first half, and everybody was concerned about him not playing that well last week. I don't know where they got the fact that he didn't play that well, but he's putting all that to bed tonight with 222 yards and 2 touchdowns in the first half, 19 of 24 passing. Chris Hogan looking like Jerry Rice out there with 7 catches for 117 yards and 2 touchdowns. Nobody's been able to cover him. They've been leaving him wide open all game long. And if you want to beat the Patriots, you can't be leaving a slot receiver open. You look at what the Patriots, how they're successful. They've had somebody in the slot who does everything perfectly. Used to be Wes Welker. Then it was Julian Edelman. Now, then it was Danny Amendola. Then it went back to Edelman. Now you got Chris Hogan there. There's always that constant of somebody who runs the routes in the slot that nobody can touch. And it's really, it's amazing to watch the Patriot offense in action, as much as it hurts as a Jets fan to have to watch them just absolutely destroy teams left and right. And they'll know it's coming. They'll know it's coming. But there is not a thing that can be done to stop them unless you get pressure on Tom Brady, which, as of right now, the Steelers have not been able to do in this game. Other things, when you want to say, now I've seen it all, there was some, one of the things I do outside of here is I broadcast for Stony Brook University, and I broadcast hockey out there. And today they were playing the University of Delaware. It was the second game of their weekend series. And last night's game, they took a lot of penalties. They're division rivals. They don't like each other. So at the end of Saturday night's game, there had been a combined 71 penalty minutes between the two teams. Delaware had taken 35 minutes of penalties. Stony Brook had taken 36. So coming into today's game, we all knew that there was the big, good chance of something like that happening again today. However, little did we know that they would go above and beyond any kind of penalty minutes I could ever imagine. This is a number I figured you couldn't get to in penalty minutes unless you had a controller in your hand. 134. Now you've seen it all. 83 penalty minutes for the University of Delaware and 49 for Stony Brook. There were about 5 misconduct penalties. I think 4 people got thrown out. And the level of hockey they play, really don't condone fighting. And you get automatically suspended for a game for getting into a fight. And there were at least 4 in today's game alone. So, you know, both of these teams are going to be shorthanded for their series next weekend. And, you know, you look at when everybody is just getting together on the ice. At the end of the second period, the Delaware goalie shoved one of Stony Brook's players, and all hell broke loose. Benches cleared. Everyone was going at each other. Then on the other side of the ice, you had the Stony Brook goalie going after one of Delaware's players. And now you've seen it all. And like I said, the open, I hate that cliche because it's strictly not true. You can't possibly have seen it all, but today was probably very, very close. Moving on with some other things, gonna jump back to football for a second, but actually before I do that, just getting into tonight's show, Zach Braziller from the New York Post, who's a basketball writer, among other things, he will be joining us in the bottom half of the show. We'll be talking some college basketball, specifically St. John's and Seton Hall, as they're the two local teams, and they played each other earlier this afternoon, which Seton Hall won 86-73. And we might even get into some NBA action, as he does write a little bit about the Nets and the Knicks as well. One of the big stories that came out this week is Ravens linebacker Zach Orr. He's a 24-year-old that played in the league just a couple of years. And he was out for week 17 with what they thought was a herniated disc in his neck. He went to go get it looked at, and it turns out that he has a congenital neck injury that's going to force him to retire, that he won't be able to play football anymore because of the fact that he will never be able to pass an NFL-level physical again. So that's continuing a really alarming trend of young star players retiring early, and especially where you have all this fear of head injuries, and you look at some of the players who played 15, 20 years ago, and they're dealing with such debilitating injuries that they can barely get out of bed in the morning. Or you look at the players who played 30 years ago, and they don't remember what their significant other looks like, or what their name is. So this is something that the NFL really needs to look at and say, how can we make this game safer for the players without harming the integrity of the game? And maybe there is no answer to that, because you can only pad the helmet so much. You can only put so much padding on the players before they look like the Michelin man out there, and they can't move, and then the game's going to be terrible for everybody to watch. And that's not comfortable for anybody. The NFL is a $10 billion industry, so they're going to continue to find ways to keep their product profitable and not really destroy what the fans want to see. Because the fans, they still want to see the bigger hits. They want to see those plays over the middle where somebody gets drilled. And unfortunately, those are the plays where you see these debilitating injuries that derail careers and destroy lives. You look at how CTE has really affected the way football conducts its operations, as many high-profile players have committed suicide or done criminal acts because of the fact that they're not fully there mentally because of injuries that they suffered playing football. It came out this week that Bo Jackson, and Bo knows. He said, if I could do it again, I would not play football, and I will not let my kids play football. And Bo Jackson is probably one of the greatest athletes of the last 35 years, and he's saying that he wouldn't have played football. And many would say that had he stuck in baseball and just played for the Royals, he would have been a Hall of Fame baseball player, probably one of the greatest players ever. And then you have the other side saying had he just stuck with football, he would have been a Hall of Fame running back. So you look at where it's trending, you're seeing more and more people discouraging their kids from playing football. So the NFL has to find new ways to keep people engaged. And one other sad story that came out from close to home in regards to this, New York Jets legend Mark Gastineau. Everybody loved Mark Gastineau. Part of the New York sack exchange. He had the sack record for over two decades. And, you know, he was a fan favorite. He's 60 years old. He came out on WOR this week and said, I am suffering from Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, dementia. That's a really sad state of affairs for a guy so revered by New York fans. And that's where you see that football has changed over the years. In the 70s and 80s, they would lead with their heads. You saw guys like Jack Tatum, who he was reviled for hits like that. And now those hits are commonplace. And it's a trend where you're seeing now these guys are falling apart at younger and younger ages, because when it comes down to it, 60 isn't that old. It's not that old anymore. Where the average American life expectancy is close to 80 years old, and this guy at 60 is losing bits of himself, and it's a real shame to see that. 8:15 here on WGBB 1240 Sports Talk, first hour. We got another sad story, unfortunately. You know, really, really sucks having to start with sad things, because nobody wants to do that. But Yordano Ventura, Royals pitcher, he's only 25 years old. He was going to be the cornerstone of the Royals rotation for the next 5-6 years. In his hometown in the Dominican Republic, died in a car accident earlier today. And then, in addition to that, in a separate accident, former top baseball prospect Andy Marte died in the Dominican Republic, again in a separate car collision, as he crashed into a house. And you would really like to hope that there were no extenuating circumstances that led to these. We'll have to wait until see what everything comes out with. And so really, this is also a shocking trend, as we've seen several young stars have their lives cut short just in the last several months, including Jose Fernandez from the Miami Marlins at 24 in that boating accident. Now Yordano Ventura at 25. And it really makes you think, you know, how precious life is, and don't take any of that for granted, because it could end at any given moment. But let's get back to the happier things where we can say, you know what, now we got all that out of the way and have you move on to other things. The Hall of Fame came out this week and they're going to induct three into the greatest of the great. That's Jeff Bagwell, Ivan Pudge Rodriguez, and Tim Raines. After 10 long years on the ballot, Tim Raines is taking his place in the Hall of Fame. He's going to be the second to last Montreal Expo to have that M on his cap before everyone will say, wait, who are the Expos again? Some guys came up short were Trevor Hoffman, who was only 5 votes away from getting into the Hall of Fame, and Vlad Guerrero, who will be probably the last Montreal Expo to get into the Hall of Fame. And he got to 71% of the vote this year on his first year of eligibility. So good for him. He should get in next year. But you look at the guys who did get in this year. Jeff Bagwell and Ivan Rodriguez were two of the premier players of the mid to late 90s into the early 2000s. Ivan Rodriguez, synonymous with great catchers. Him and Mike Piazza, who got into the Hall of Fame last year, are the two greatest catchers of this era. And you look at Pudge Rodriguez, his stats were comparative to Johnny Bench. And he and Johnny Bench are the only two catchers to get into the Hall of Fame on their first ballot. You know, of recent, Gary Carter didn't get in on his first ballot. He was on the ballot for a good 5-6 years before he got in. And catchers are a very hard position in baseball to get into the Hall of Fame, as it turns out. You know, unless your name is Yogi Berra or Bill Dickey or even Roy Campanella, you gotta be the greatest of the great to get in. As recently, you know, Carlton Fisk got in. He had been on the ballot for several years before getting in, but former teammate of Ivan Rodriguez, Jorge Posada, is now going to be off the ballot as he got only 3% of the vote. And he will, not that I believe he should get in, as much as he was a great player to watch, he is not going to be in the Hall of Fame. Looking at Jeff Bagwell, he was one of the top first basemen in the game, generally overshadowed by guys like Mark McGwire. And there will always be that cloud over Jeff Bagwell, whether he did performance-enhancing drugs or not, in a time where it was being virtually ignored by the powers that be in baseball. So while he was never came out as he had tested positive for anything, there will always be that shadow of a doubt because of the fact that when he came up, he was a lanky middle infielder that was moved over to third base or over to first base, and then he came and put the power switch on and tore up the Astrodome and then Minute Maid Park for a decade and a half. So congratulations to the two of them. And Tim Raines, arguably one of the greatest players of the 1980s, played in 4 decades. He's one of only 27 players to play Major League Baseball in 4 different decades. He's one of only a few players to actually play a game with his son, as he did with Tim Raines Jr. on the Baltimore Orioles back in 2001, which, you know, that's a cool thing to say. As a father and a son, it's like, hey, I got to play with my son in a Major League Baseball game. Or, hey, I got to play with my dad standing next to me in left field in one of my games. Like, you know, most people don't get to say that very often. So that's a fun thing for him. 808 stolen bases. He's got he'd been on base over 4,000 times in his career, which is one of the highest amounts of times on base in baseball history. He actually has a higher stolen base efficiency than Ricky Henderson, despite having 600 less steals. This Ricky Henderson was at 1,406 to Raines' 808. And you wonder what could have been with him, why it took so long. Sabermetrics really did help him, and having that really online following of people campaigning for him to get in. And it goes to show you how much power the people do have in the voting process, that sports writers will look into further stats and they can really have a good say in what's going to happen. So like guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, they're starting to go on the up and up as they're closing in on 60% of the vote now, and you need 75% to get in. So you look at those guys, and as the stance on performance-enhancing drug users going into the Hall of Fame might start to soften a little bit with the induction of Bud Selig this year and the doubts that there were on Ivan Rodriguez and Jeff Bagwell. So you might see those greats like Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, who, in my opinion, should be in the Hall of Fame and probably should have gotten in 3 years ago. They're going to start getting some real close consideration. 8:22 here, and we're going to give you one more update. See, I think we should be just out of halftime of the Patriots-Steelers game. And again, if the Patriots win, they will be the home team for Super Bowl 51, as they were the number one seed in the AFC with a 14-2 record. And they did that without Tom Brady for the first four games. It's 17-10 with 13-10 to go in the third quarter. New England has the ball. And you know that it would just stick in Roger Goodell's craw if at the end of the day he has to go up to Tom Brady and hand him the Lombardi Trophy after everything that happened with Deflategate. And whether he should have been suspended four games or not is now irrelevant, because Tom Brady came back with a vengeance and has just basically run roughshod over the NFL. And he's doing this at 39 years old. Peyton Manning last year at 39 couldn't throw the ball 15 yards. Tom Brady is putting up MVP numbers and just absolutely destroying everybody in the playoffs. Today, he threw his 60th touchdown pass in the playoffs. No other quarterback has more than 45, which really goes to show the dominance of Tom Brady, that he can go in no matter what age. He's been doing this now since he's 23 years old when he first took over for Drew Bledsoe back in 2001, and he's just going. And there doesn't look like any signs that he's going to stop anytime soon. So there is the potential that New England Patriots could win another two or three Super Bowls in Tom Brady's career. So unfortunately for all of us Jets fans out there, and pretty much for everybody else in the league, it's just another continuing waiting game of us having to wait for him and Belichick to just go away before somebody else has a chance. Like I did the math this afternoon. Tom Brady has appeared in 25% of the Super Bowls in my lifetime. And I don't know if that shows my age or just shows the fact that the Patriots are a really good team. It might be a little combination of both. But you know, when you know that the Patriots are going to be there every single year, as a Patriots fan, you love it. Because, hey, you know, my team's going to the Super Bowl or going to be really close. And if you're a fan of everybody else, you're just thinking, ugh, not this guy again. Somebody please beat him. And this year, everybody's rooting for Ben Roethlisberger to do it. And if he can't do it, 90% of the nation's going to be rooting for Matt Ryan to finally take out Tom Brady and be the next person to take him down and deny him that fifth Super Bowl. Russell Wilson had tried a couple years ago, and had he handed off the ball to Marshawn Lynch, the Patriots would still have only those three Super Bowls, because he would not have won that fourth Super Bowl had he handed the ball off to Marshawn Lynch. But that's old history, and you know, it's a what have you done for me lately. Tom Brady is, in fact, playing at MVP levels once again, and nobody's going to take that away from him, not even this Jets fan who can't wait to see him just go into the sunset, take Giselle with you, and go into your villa and California or wherever you want to go and just stop putting on the Patriot jersey every Sunday. I think we're all ready for that, but it's not going to happen for another few years, so we're just all going to have to sit and suffer in a muted silence as Tom Brady takes the field and dismantles whatever team you root for. Tom Brady has dismantled them at least once or twice, and we just got to wait for that to finally stop. We're gonna take a quick break in a couple of minutes. Again, Zach Braziller from the New York Post will be joining us when we come back. And if you want to get involved with the show, the number is 631-888-8811. I would love to hear from you. and see what you got to say, because we can have a lot of fun here. I'm Andy Sukoff. I'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we are back here on Sports Talk 1240 WGBB. I'm Andy Sukoff, and just got to give a shout-out to my man Brian back there behind the glass, making this all possible. We're just waiting on Zach Braziller. He should be joining us in a couple of minutes. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, he's a reporter for the New York Post doing college basketball and professional basketball. So we got a couple big – had a few big games in Big East action this weekend, including – the two locals, St. John's and Seton Hall, going at it, with Seton Hall winning today 86-73. And there were a couple of big recruits there, which we'll talk with Zach about it when he gets on. And you got the number one team in America coming out of the Big East down the road in Philadelphia, Villanova. Creighton is a top 20 team. And you gotta like what you see from the Big East and what they're capable of doing. And maybe they're going to be making some noise here as Zach Braziller joins us today. Zach, how are you tonight?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Would love to have the Patriots-Steelers game on a screen in front of me, but, you know, it is what it is. we were talking before you jumped on the St. John-Seton Hall game today. You're big on college basketball, and Seton Hall won today 86-73 with some big recruits at the game.
Yeah. They had a number of top kids there, the Hudson Catholic trio of Lewis King, Javon Quinterly, and Luther Muhammad were there. Seton Hall, basically dominated the game from the start. Kind of not really a huge shocker. Considering they're the better team, they're desperate, and they play with a sense of urgency from the outset.
So when looking at this game, Kadeen Carrington and Angel Delgado are really leading the Seton Hall team with the departure of Isaiah Whitehead. Did you see them taking on as much an impact as they have thus far, or is it kind of a surprise to everybody?
No, I think everyone knew for this team to be good, the juniors, the four junior starters, were going to have to be, have to play big, we're talking about Carrington, Delgado, Desi Rodriguez, and Ishmael Sonogo. Until this recent road trip, Seton Hall was looking good. They're 12-3, they did find the Big East. They went on the road and they lost three in a row. They had a pretty tough road trip, about 3 road games in 6 days. And, you know, they got back to business today. I think they're a tournament team. You know, I think they'll probably be around probably an 8-9 seed. But, you know, they have a lot more home games now coming up. So I think, you know, they're going to get rolling a little. I think there's been a big adjustment without Whitehead now. The Big East season has gotten going. You know, they don't have that playmaker. But today was a pretty good start for them to kind of get back to where they were before this road trip.
And you said they should be an 8 or 9 seed. If they have a good showing in the Big East tournament, could they potentially get up into the 5-6 range, you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it all depends on what happens the rest of the way. You know, the one thing about the Big East, you have four ranked teams, so they do have a lot of opportunities, you know, to get some good wins. That's just where I think they'll end up. I think they'll end up around an 8 or 9. You know, we'll see. I do think they have the potential to be higher. You know, they have work to do, obviously. You know, they're 3-4 in the league. They did beat Marquette, which is a good win. They have good non-conference wins over South Carolina and California. So they're in okay shape, but they got a lot of work to do. I do like their team. You know, I think they still have to figure some things out in the half court. But I do like their team, and I do think they'll be a tournament team when it's all said and done.
All right, and looking at the other side of the ball in St. John's, you know, after getting out to a decent start and winning those first two big games in the Big East, including a upset win over Butler, things have kind of fallen off the rails. You know, they beat DePaul, but then they go in and they kind of started to spin their tires. Is it an underlying problem where it's just a young team that's trying to find their groove, or is there like a bigger underlying issue?
No, I mean, I think, you know, it's a young team that has has talent on the perimeter. They really are thin inside. You know, Kasum Yakwe, who had such a good freshman year, has really struggled this year. You know, they need help inside, definitely, but they're also a young team. I mean, their two best players, freshman guards Marcus Lovett and Shamori Pons, are, you know, they're going through the Big East for the first time. You know, they did win their first two games, and they've had some tough ones. They lost at home to Creighton back when, obviously, when Creighton had Maurice Watts and they were a different team. They've lost some other games on the road, but, you know, they did play Nova very tough at home. They did beat DePaul recently. I think they lost a few games in the non-conference that they obviously would like to have back, but I do think they're in okay shape. You know, I said it'd be a year, if they could win 6 to 7 Big East games, it would be a good year considering where they were last year. And, you know, I still think they're going to get to around 6 or 7 Big East wins. Today they had a bad first half and they played a good second half. I think that's kind of what you get with a young team, especially when you're relying so much on freshmen and freshman guards, and that's clearly what this team is doing. Pons, who's been a great addition, has really had a good freshman year, really didn't do much today, struggled, didn't take a lot of shots. And, you know, they're not gonna be able to beat anyone on the road if they don't have Pons and Levet going. You know, I think there's been some positives. Tariq Owens, he's a sophomore forward, has been really good. He's really shown he could be a big part of this future for this program. Malik Ellison has had some nice moments. You know, they have two very good transfers coming in next year who will really help. Justin Salmon from Arizona and Marvin Clark from Michigan State. They know what they need. They know they need to beef up the front court. They know they need to bring in experience. I expect that to happen. I'm sure they will look into the graduate transfer market. I think, you know, they start off well and they have some tough road games. They have to go to Xavier. Going to Seton Hall today, you know, you knew it was going to be difficult, especially with Seton Hall desperately needing a victory. I think the expectations maybe were a little high to begin the year, and I still think they're going to get 6 to 7 Big East wins. And to me, if they get that, considering where they were last year and considering their youth, it would be a sign of progress.
Yeah, and we're talking to Zach Braziller of the New York Post. One of the players from St. John's this year that I've actually been very impressed with his play is Bashir Ahmed, and he's really made some big strides as the season's progressed.
Bashir is a Bronx native. He went to junior college at Hudson Community College. there's no question about Bashir's ability. He can shoot threes. He's athletic. He's a slasher. The issue he's had is shot selection and, you know, kind of learning how to play at this level. You know, you see there are times, you know, like early in the first half today where he's dribbling the ball too much. He's taking bad shots. In the second half, he'll attack the basket. They need that more. They need him to be more a factor in touch. Like we said, they are thin up front. I think Bashir is going to only get better. I think next year he'll be a much better player. I think he's getting better. I think he's slowly learning. I think that's the case for, you know, all of St. John's team and the coaching staff too. You know, they're all learning. You know, this is an inexperienced coaching staff. We know that. You know, I think it's taking time. Maybe it's not happening as fast as some St. John's fans would like, but I do think there are improvements being made and there is progress, which to me is what you wanted to see this year.
Yeah,
and I think some fans had, you know, unreal expectations of winning 18 or 19 games. And, you know, this year is about taking the next step. Now, next year you have more talent coming into the program. And you got to, you know, they're going to get better. They're going to add some front court pieces. You know, I do see progress being made.
And so, like Nick Saban says, trust the process, right?
Yes.
All right, we're going to jump to just the Big East in general. Villanova, obviously top team in the nation in the rankings. Josh Hart, a big reason for that, and he's a potential player of the year candidate.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Nova twice in the last week against both St. John's and Seton Hall. There's very little not to like about Nova. You know, Hart's tremendous. He does it at both ends of the floor. Chris Jenkins is having a terrific senior year. Mikal Bridges, I don't think a lot of people talk about, but he's a very good role player. He's going to be a star there. You know, my one thing with Villanova is depth. They're very thin. They go about seven deep. They don't have a big guy they can just throw the ball into the post with as they did last year. You know, their best post player is probably Josh Hart. You know, last year they had Ochefa who they would go to, and now they don't have that this year. I could see some teams giving them issues, you know, in the tournament with that. You know, it doesn't sound like Phil Booth is going to play this year. He's got knee problems. They might get medically redshirt him. That obviously would hurt them because he would be another guy. Right now they're seven deep. You know, it to me is a concern if I'm Villanova when I get into March and the tournament. You know, foul trouble can really hurt them. They really only have three legitimate, you know, bigs. I consider Jenkins more of a wing when you look at Eric Paschal, Bridges, and Darryl Reynolds. And that's something that guys getting foul trouble is going to be an issue. But again, you know, we're nitpicking. This is a very good team. It's a very experienced team. It's a very smart team. They are very, very, very tough. And, you know, now that Creighton lost Maurice Watson, I don't think there's any doubt Villanova is going to win the league again and will be the heavy favorite to win the Big East tournament.
And like you're talking how they're very thin, and the Big East plays a very physical style of basketball where a lot of the other conferences don't, so that foul trouble with a lack of depth can be a very lethal combination in the tournament.
Right, right. I mean, I'm sure that's their biggest concern is foul trouble or an injury can really create, you know, could put them in a tough spot. You know, time will tell. We'll see. You know, they have obviously all the pieces. They're repeat. You know, Jalen Brunson, their sophomore point guard, has really come on and is having a nice year. Him and Bridges, I see as this team's stars next year. They're both just tremendously talented players. But as I said, that depth is an issue. You get an injury, you get foul trouble, all of a sudden you're in big trouble.
And now looking at one of the disappointments of the Big East this year, Georgetown. And you were I was following on your Twitter account earlier, which and they're 1-6 in Big East play, and
yeah.
I'm sure they weren't prepared for that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they didn't make the tournament last year. It was one of the worst seasons Georgetown has had in a long time, and the hope was they would be even better this year, and just hasn't happened. You know, I know the Georgetown fans are not happy at all. There really is no reason for them to be what they've been the last year. They're recruiting at a high level. You know, they have weapons. They have pieces. And, you know, JT3 is under some heat. You know, we all know who his dad is. But eventually you got to win some games. And right now he's you know, they're really struggling. I mean, they're 1-6. You know, they're a lot, you know, they're tied in for last with DePaul. I just don't know if anything's going to change. They have ability. You know, it's not like they don't have talent. They have plenty of talent. It just hasn't come together. And, you know, this year has almost been a continuation of last year where there's just these performances. You just don't get it. You know, they lost to Providence at home by, I think, about 18. And look, Providence is not a bad team, but this Providence team is not an NCAA tournament team. There's no reason Georgetown should be getting blown out at home by Providence. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying JT3 is getting fired, but you know what? You better win some games here.
Yeah, I mean,
it's going to get even louder. You know, the Georgetown fan base is not happy with what's going on. It's only going to increase, you know, if this doesn't change. And I don't really see why it's going to change more than, you know, I'm not saying they're going to win one Big East game this year, but I have a hard time seeing them winning more than 4 or 5.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very tough road that they're on right now. And, you know, and like you said, Roy Hibbert's not going to walk through that door, even though they're getting some great recruits. Like,
well, they have players. It's not... They got plenty of players. That is, I'll put it this way, that is not 1-6 talent. There's no reason that team should be 1-6.
And
I'm not saying they should be at the top of the Big East, but at worst case, they should be maybe, you know, 3-4, 4-3. They should not be 1-6.
And I'm sure Georgetown fans would agree with you. And I can tell you that from experience that they're starting to get very antsy.
I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I mean, last year, you know, it's okay to have a bad year. Last year was a bad year, but this year it's basically more the same, you know?
Yeah, gonna take a wide approach, you know, the entire league. One of the teams I know I shouldn't be surprised about anymore because they do it every year is Gonzaga. They're ranked number 4 right now, and they're doing it without Domantas Sabonis. You know, they lost a lot of their big players from last year, and they just keep chugging along. They're 19-0, and Mark Few's has got that team rolling along. It's amazing, really.
Yeah, I mean, they lost some key pieces, but they added some. You know, don't forget that their point guard, Nigel Goss-Williams, he's a Washington transfer. He's been tremendous, been as good as any point guard in the country. They have some big recruits. They have some holdovers. You know, that's what a program is. Every year, new guys emerge, new guys step up. And, you know, we're seeing it here with them. I mean, they're very good. They took it to St. Mary's, who's a really good team recently. They could trip up, but I think it's reasonable to expect them to enter the tournament undefeated, you know, like Wichita State did a few years back. You know, they have very good guard play. They have solid bigs. You know, don't forget, last year they were without their 7-footer, Przemek Karnowski. I'm pretty sure I didn't pronounce his first name right. But, he missed all of last year with an injury, and he's back, and he's been a big factor for them. You know, they lost some key guys, but they also added some big-time players. And Mark Few is as good of a coach as there is in the country. And they are, you know, they are a real threat. I wrote for tomorrow that we haven't seen a team out west make the Final Four in a long time. And this year we have a bunch of possibilities. You know, you have the three teams in the Pac-12 with Arizona, Oregon, and UCLA. You have Gonzaga. The West Coast is really strong this year.
And looking at UCLA, Lonzo Ball, he's one of the best players in America. You know, I stayed up late to watch the UCLA Arizona game the other night, and earlier in the week the UCLA Arizona State game, and just watching him on the court, he's going to make some noise at the next level too.
Yeah, you know, people, I've heard the comparison to Jason Kidd. I think that's obviously a little premature. But, you know, people have made that comparison. He's a tremendous point guard. One question with UCLA's defense, Arizona put up 96 on them. They only have 2 losses now to Oregon and UCLA, but they're a team that, you know, looks to score and get up and down. They're not a big-time defensive team. And, you know, maybe if they face the wrong matchup in March, they could be in trouble, but they're obviously a legit Final Four contender. There's no question about it.
And if you had to make your pick now, who would be your National Player of the Year?
I'd pick Josh Hart, best player on the best team. He's a senior. You know, the reason I take him is because he's a complete basketball player. There's some very good players who don't play both ends. Hart rebounds the ball. He's a big-time defender. He guards top perimeter threats on the opposition. He leads this team. And that, you know, right now, that's who I'm picking.
All right, I like that. I'm gonna this will be the last question, then I'll let you go. You know, you got probably some articles to write, and probably want to catch the end of the game. How many Big East teams do you think can make the big dance this year? In like, what would be the max, you think?
I think six can make it, and I think there's a really good chance for it. I mean, I think Butler, Xavier, Villanova, and Creighton are all votes all locks. I think Seton Hall and Marquette are both going to make it too. You know, I think the league is very deep. They've been very strong. I think that's really what we're looking at here. I really think you're going to see six.
All right. Thank you, Zach, for taking the time. Much appreciated.
No problem.
All right. That was Zach Braziller from the New York Post, and you can follow him on Twitter at NYPost_Brazil. And, you know, really, really nice to take some time and talk some basketball with us. And he's thinking six out of the Big East can make it to the big dance, and then, you know, anything can happen there. You know, Villanova last year won the national title. They're going to try to repeat, and they may be doing that as the number one seed in the entire NCAA. Quick update from Foxborough. It's now 20-9. The Patriots kicked a field goal, so they're up two scores with 4 minutes to go in the third. Tom Brady with 333 yards in three quarters, so he's already on pace to throw for almost 450 yards. LeGarrette Blount has a rushing touchdown. Chris Hogan's got 9 catches for 180 yards and 2 touchdowns, so he's got Julio Jones stats right now. And, you know, if you have him on your daily fantasy and you're playing for some money, you're dancing through the streets right now knowing that Chris Hogan has silently put up for you about 39 points if you're playing in a PPR league. A couple things from around the world of sports. The New York Rangers with a 1-0 shutout win over the Detroit Red Wings in overtime. It was a really tightly contested game. And finally, a minute 56 into, or about 3 minutes into the period, JT Miller got a nice feed from Matt Zuccarello and Brady Shea to put it past Jared Coro, who only had to make 18 saves, but it was the 19th that he couldn't make. So with 3-on-3 overtime, which is a great idea, and they did such a great job on making that happen. A lot more open ice. The Rangers get two big points that they really needed and take the game against the Detroit Red Wings. Crazy stat that they actually said during the game, and I didn't even think about it until it was said. The last time the Detroit Red Wings didn't make the playoffs was in 1989. And only three teams since that point, well, actually the first stat was that there were only 21 teams in the NHL at that point. Only three have, four of them are now playing in different series, or in different states or provinces of Canada. And on top of that, only three teams are still playing in the same building that they were playing in 1989. And two of them were playing in today's game, the Rangers and the Red Wings. And it actually took a little while for Dave Maloney to figure out what the other one was. It was the Calgary Flames, who are still playing in the Saddle Dome. Every other team has gotten a new building, except those three. Both all have been renovated at some given point, but those buildings are still standing. Looking at some tennis in Down Under, and while it's early morning out in Australia, Serena Williams, looking to get to the quarterfinals yet again, is up 7-5, 5-2 in her match against Jerkova from the Czech Republic. She's ranked number 16. Serena Williams is ranked number 2. Now, Serena Williams wins the Australian Open because Angie Kerber lost earlier today. She will reclaim the number one ranking that she had a stranglehold on for so long. Some other big matches are going to be coming up later today into tomorrow. You have Grigor Dimitrov facing Dennis Istomin in a fourth-round match. And normally that wouldn't be that significant because it's the number 15 guy against an unranked player. The reason it's significant is that the other day, Dennis Istomin took out Novak Djokovic. So both Djokovic is number 2 seed. And right now, the highest seed left on the men's draw is number 3, Milos Raonic, as Andy Murray was taken out earlier this week. Djokovic is out, so Raonic is the top remaining seed left. Another big matchup in the fourth round. You have number 6, Gael Monfils, against Rafael Nadal. And that's going to be a really fun match to watch at Rod Laver Arena. So if you can get up really early or stay up really late to go watch that on ESPN2, I would highly recommend doing it, because those two put on some good tennis, and both are capable of winning a major at any given point. Venus Williams today also moved on to the quarterfinals, and she's making her way back up the rankings, as everybody's probably hoping for one last Venus Serena final, because everybody remembers all those years where one or the other was in every single final, and then the few times that they would face each other, it was always good tennis. So the Australian Open, unfortunately, it's terrible, the fact that, you know, here it starts at 9 o'clock on the East Coast, and then it goes until 4 in the morning, and probably only the most loyal tennis fans or somebody with insomnia is staying up to watch it at that point. But if you get a chance to watch, you'll get some good tennis today, because now it's the best of the best are starting to creep their way through, and then you get a couple of those nice underdog stories like Dennis Istomin, who's trying to get his way into the quarterfinals. We got a couple more minutes left to play with here, so the number, if anybody wants to call, is 631-888-8811. Would love to hear from you. A couple big things happening this week in the world of sports. You have college basketball. I'm a little bit getting a little bit ahead of myself. I'm already ready for spring ball, and that we still got a little way to go. You'll have the Pro Bowl, which nobody cares about, as they're just waiting for the Super Bowl to happen in 2 weeks on February 5th. And everybody's excited for the Super Bowl because, you know, you want to see the best of the best, and you know 100 million people are going to be watching that game and just getting really pumped. So right now, we already know that the Falcons are there. And as of right now, it's looking like the New England Patriots are going to be the other team, unless the Pittsburgh Steelers really have to make an impressive comeback now, as they're down now 27-9 with their most recent score, LeGarrette Blount, with a 1-yard touchdown run, which, and Gostkowski made the extra point. They've already scored 10 points in this quarter, as Gostkowski hit a field goal earlier. So the Steelers are going to really have to really engage, get everybody involved, Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, Jesse James. If Heath Miller wants to come out of the stands and throw back on his jersey, I'm sure they'd really appreciate the help, because everybody on the Steelers side wants this game, especially James Harrison, who this could be his last game if they don't win today. And he's had a phenomenal career, and he would love to have that one last ring on his finger to get his, I believe this would be his third Super Bowl ring, and that's definitely a way to call it a career. I think we're just about getting ready to wrap it up here. Got a few more minutes left here, and you just look at what is going on today, so many big stories happening, and Some of them good stories, some of them bad. Some of them make you think, some of them are going to make you wonder what's coming next. And I believe the Falcons being the NFC champions is the questioning of what's coming next. They really came out of nowhere. They weren't necessarily even going to be the number 2 seed. They weren't sure if they were going to be hosting a playoff game. They wound up getting a bye. Two home games, especially with the fact that the Packers beat the Cowboys, and just they're going on a really magical run for them and the fans of Atlanta. Arthur Blank probably is grinning ear to ear right now, And you have to think that the Falcons and their fans are going nuts down there in Georgia. They're having fun. And that's what you want from a team, especially if you're a fan of them. You want to see everybody having fun, happy. And we here in New York we just got to wait till next year, because the Giants couldn't do it. Jets are nowhere close. But those things can always change from year in to year out. And that's all you can hope for, that everybody comes back next year and gets it started and goes on that nice run that the Falcons are having this year. All right, we're going to start wrapping up here. Just want to thank Brian behind the glass for making everything possible. I want to thank Zach Braziller for joining us tonight. And one last closing message. Please don't use the phrase, "Now I've seen it all." Because once you've seen it all, there's always something new to see. No matter what it is, no matter where you are, and no matter what sport you play. I'm Andy Sukoff, and that will do it from here at WGBB 1240 AM. You all have a good night.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.